Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puranamunina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshini Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayini Ambatvamanusantadhami Bhagavad-gita Bhagavad-dveshini.
Let's start at verse 60. We did it last time, but I'll do a little bit more on it. And then we'll go to the next two verses. Chapter 18, verse 60.
Svabhavajena Kaunteya, Svabhavajena Kaunteya, Nibaddha Swena Karmana, Nibaddha Swena Karmana, Kartum Nechasiyan Mohat, Kartum Nechasiyan Mohat, Karishasya Vashokitat, Karishasya Vashokitat, Svabhavajena Kaunteya Nibaddha Swena Karmana Karatum Na Ichasi Yet Mohat Karishasi Avashaha 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 Apita. Okay.
So Kaunteya is a patronymic, it's a tadita form from Kunti. Kunti is Arjuna's mother. So these taditas, you can see that they're tadita often by the Vridhi letter for those Sanskrit people, that au, uo au. So when they take a Vridhi letter like that, it's often a tadita, and many taditas are patronymics or matronymics. So the mother, okay. So, O son of Kunti, Kaunteya. So he says, Nibaddha. Nibaddha means bound, past passive participle. Bound swena karmana, by your own karma, by your own actions. Svabhavajena, svabhavaja. Ja means born, which are born by your own, out of your own nature. So bound by the karmas which are rooted in, which are coming out of your own disposition. Here, nature doesn't mean svabhava like swarupa. It's the prakriti, your very disposition. So bound by those, by your own swena is your own karma, which is really coming out of your own disposition. Kartum na ichasi yen mohat. He says, that which you do not want to do, kartum na ichasi. You want na ichasi, you don't want kartum to do. Yet that which you don't want to do, mohat, but because of your own delusion, your own confusion, kadishasi avashaha apitat, just that thing, apitat, just that very thing, you will do helplessly. Avashaha means with kri. You, this is a future, kadishasi, you will do that. You will be helpless. You will helplessly do that, even though you don't want to do it. So because of your own confusion, your own delusion, you find yourself doing what you don't want to do. Because of your own disposition. So this is the whole thing that Krishna is trying to teach Arjuna. Why stay in the world and do karma yoga and not go and take the sannyasa? It's because one's disposition changes slowly. It's almost like saying that your unconscious material, all of the grooves in your brain, take time to change. And so all of the triggers inside take time to change. And so he does, and Swamiji in his commentary gives a little, talks a little bit about Arjuna and about Bhishma and Bhima and all of these major characters in the Mahabharata, says these people had a tremendous clarity of mind, very sharp, very clear, not tainted with adharma, right? They had strong, bright, clear minds, but they were also very quick to anger, you know? And if somebody challenged them or did an insult to them, they would be very quick to retaliate because they were kshatriyas. That was their disposition. They weren't turn the other cheek sannyasis. You know, a sannyasi who said, "Don't, it's okay, don't bother, just, it's alright," you know. But Arjuna wouldn't do that, you know. Arjuna would strike out, he would strike back. Not out of a dharma, but just out of temper, you know. And because that was his disposition. He had the disposition, rajasic disposition. Rajasic was sattva. That's, you know, sattva being secondary. So that's the clarity. But the rajas is the force, the power, the quickness to anger. That's the rajas. That's his disposition. That's the prakriti, sattva, rajas, and tamas. That's the svabhava, this mix, you know, which is his disposition. And that disposition is not going to do very well, you know, sitting as a sannyasi in, you know, up in Rishikesh. Well, not Rishikesh anymore. We have to go much higher now. Rishikesh is way over up to Uttarkashi. In the mountains, Norway. Up by the beautiful glaciers and pure silence, pristine. But to sit there in kind of a contemplative space, the disposition isn't set for that, really, you know? And so Swamiji's used the example of, for somebody like Arjuna or Bhishma or any of the Pandava brothers, all of them had a lot of sattva. It means their mind had good qualities, good, beautiful qualities, and a lot of compassion also. And so when Arjuna was faced with this war and Krishna, as his charioteer, drove him out into the middle, and he looked at either side, he saw all his family, his teachers, people who were very, very dear to him, and he was filled with compassion. And he also saw clearly that there's really no way to come out ahead in this war. There's no way. Even he knew he could be victorious in the war, but what kind of a victory is it when he's slaughtered all of his family and all of the people that are dear to him, which is actually what happened? I mean, almost everybody was killed in that war. And so he just saw it as a vision. It just, the victory would be tainted with blood of all of the people, and that's exactly what he said, it would be tainted with all of the blood of these people. So he said, I would much rather just go to the forest. I would much rather take sannyasa and go to the forest and just live a life, you know, of bhiksha and a life of alms and just study and be with this knowledge. I would much, much rather do that. Please let me do that, you know. But Krishna really did not go along with that at all. And even in chapter 2, before verse 11, he starts kind of berating Arjuna, kind of getting back in tune with who he is actually is. Because at this point, when he's seeing this, he's feeling so much love and so much compassion, and it's like poor Duryodhana. Duryodhana is the, you know, the Kauravas. And the Duryodhana is someone who is a sociopath. He has no interest in dharma at all. He only has really interest in himself and his own wealth. And that makes it very clear in the Mahabharata that, you know, he's always portrayed as kind of the embodiment of the asuric rakshasa type temperament, you know.
Chaining.
So anyway, so But at this point, at this point, the reality of who he is and what he's brought about for the whole clan, you know, is not what's important, you know, because his heart's overflowing with compassion. And so Krishna reminds him, do you know what they're going to say when you run off to the Himalayas? They're going to talk about how afraid you were of them and how weak you were, that you were scared to stand up to them, and how unmanly you are, you know? And so here again now, they're bringing this out, that Swamiji brings it out. Here Arjuna goes to the forest, and he takes his sannyasa, and he's sitting and contemplating, and one of his brothers comes up and tells him, you know what they're saying about you? You know? They think that you're just a weakling who's terribly afraid of them. So Swamiji will joke and say, then Arjuna will say, what? What? And all of that, the kshatriya, yeah, the kshatriya, his swabhava, that swabhava will come out, you know? And so the idea is this, in this verse, you can't just go against, it takes time for the prakriti actually to transform and to change into something that just kind of enjoys a shanta vritti all of the time, you know? And so you don't want to put yourself in a situation where that type of maturity, that particular type of maturity, doesn't really have a chance to come. It's that karma yoga buddhi that allows that, you know? And that karma yoga buddhi requires that you stay in your environment. So all of the triggers that are there surrounding you are able to torture you. That all of those triggers, that all of those weak spots, you know, where you're quick to react, quick to anger, all of that, quick to being hurt, quick to withdraw, all of these type of experiences, or this weight, this kind of the swabhava, the unconscious material, and just your nature itself, are really on the table, so that you can be with that, all of those reactions, in a way that is actually helpful, so they no longer have the power to kind of take you away with them. And, but to do that, you have to stay basically where you are. And that's what he's trying to tell Arjuna, that actually it won't work to sequester yourself, because all that happens is that your nature just remains dormant, just sitting there dormant until something comes along to prick it. And then there it is. You could have been in a situation where it remained dormant for years and years and years, but as soon as the right trigger comes, it arises as though it was just yesterday. Nothing has happened. And so we need to be in an environment where all of these things can arise, all of the swabhava and all of our reactions and things like that can actually arise into our knowledge. And when they arrive into our knowledge, there's a transformation that takes place. The buddhi is the one that has knowledge. The buddhi has the knowledge, has the clarity. And now all of this unconscious material and all of what is kind of natural to you is now rising into your knowledge, which is a good thing. When it rises into your knowledge, then your buddhi, the ahankara, deals with it differently. Even without knowledge, as you mature just in the world, as all of this material comes up, it always comes up into the buddhi, you know, your mind that is here now. And so your mind goes on maturing and changing, and that means it continues to deal with these triggers differently, you know, as it gains knowledge and clarity, even secular knowledge and clarity. But here the knowledge is knowledge of your own being. So this verse is actually, it's just a really clear verse, putting into perspective everything that he's been saying. throughout the whole Gita. Okay, so I just wanted to wind this up. This is what we did last week, or last time I was here. Let's go into 61.
Ishvara sarva bhutanam. Ishvara sarva bhutanam. Vidyeshir jina tishtati. Vidyeshir jina tishtati. Brahmayam sarva bhutani. Brahmayam sarva bhutani. Yantrarudhani mayaya. Yantrarudhani mayaya.
Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtati. Brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. Ishvara, the Lord, Ishvara, nominative singular Ishvara, sarva bhutanam hriddeshe. Desha means place. Deshe, in the place of the heart. Hrit is heart. Oh, heart and buddhi are the same. The buddhi is located in the heart, you know? Like, I'm thinking about this. Now I'm thinking about this. It's down here. So, in the place of the heart, in the space of the heart, hrit desha, in the buddhi. So, in the space of the heart of sarva bhutas, sarva bhutanam, of all beings, Ishvara tishtati. Ishvara remains there. Tisht comes from the root sta, to stand, to be placed, to remain. Tisha, sta tisht. So Ishvara tishtati. Ishvara remains there. Hey Arjuna, remains there in the heart of all beings. Brahmayan, causing, Brahm means to make move. It also means, it's a causal from Brahm. Brahm means to like wander about in circles. Brahmayan means causing to go around, to revolve around. So Ishvara remaining there in the heart of all beings, causing all of the beings, sarva bhutani, causing all of them, all of the beings, to revolve around yantra arudhani, as though mounted on a yantra. A yantra is like a machine, but here imagine it's as though there are a bunch of dolls on a merry-go-round type of thing. So as though rotating around, revolving around, moving around on some sort of a machine, all of them doing their little things on this machine, mayaya, by the force of maya, because of maya, by magic, as though by magically rotating around on this, causing everybody to rotate around on this machine, like this merry-go-round, magically, as though by magic, he says. So Ishvara, remaining there in the heart of all beings, as though by magic, makes all of these beings rotate around, mounted on, as though circle around, as though mounted on a yantra, on a machine. So, kind of a radical verse. No being, first of all, Bhagavan, in the heart of all beings, is not doing anything. The Atma is not doing anything. Brahman is not doing anything. We simply am. So it's simply being, conscious being, right? But conscious being, the conscious being which is me, which is Brahman, which is the very self of Ishvara, is, we say, is the very upadana karana, what we call vivarta upadana karana, the material cause which itself undergoes no change whatsoever, of the whole maya. It's the adhishtana, the You know when we have the Satya Mitya, this word, Adhishtana? Adhishtana is what the Mitya depends upon. So the Adhishtana, like the example, rope snake, the rope is the Adhishtana. That is the truth of what is actually there. Without the snake, without the rope, there is no snake. The only thing that is actually there is the Adhishtana. That's what we mean by the word Adhishtana. Sta means that which is remains, and whatever is on top of it, right, is the Adi. So the Adhishtana, it's that which is there as the very support, the very truth of Maya. Maya has no being, no existence, nothing without the Adhishtana. And so the Satya Mitya relationship between Brahman and my own being and this creation is important to understand here, because the Maya has for its truth, for its basis, only me, and I don't change. I am not part of Maya in the sense that I'm not an object within Maya. I'm not subject to time and space. I'm not objectifiable. I'm not coming and going. It's kind of like if I ask you to imagine a universe, you yourself haven't all of a sudden become the size of your imagination. Nothing has happened to you. You're the Adhishtana of the imagination, and all kinds of things, the planets can all be swirling around, and you can zoom in onto the earth and see all the activity going on the earth. All of that activity is going on within the time and space that belongs to the Maya itself, right? And time and space, when Maya is withdrawn, just like in deep sleep, when you withdraw your own, when your own mind is withdrawn, there is no time and space, right? There's just time and space comes with the projection of the Maya. So, from the standpoint of you, your being, or just from your standpoint, is just pure, simple being, which is not doing anything at all from its own standpoint. But it is your being that when the creation is projected, that is there as the Adhishtana of the entire creation, of the infinite order of the entire creation that we can call the Dharma of the entire creation. If we look at all of the infinite, Swamiji will call it like the infinite order, all of the laws, the infinite network of laws that we go on through science, discovering on all the different realms that we're able to analyze, we discover networks of relationships and networks of laws. Those laws, and all of the nama rupas, whatever names and forms, everything that exists within that creation, are bound and part and parcel of the infinite order of that creation. And nothing gets outside of it. Like warp and woof, every experience that we have is contained within that infinite order. In another way, different languages we can use, it's contained within the prakriti and the organization of the prakriti, sattva, rajas, and tamas. All of the jivas also, all of the minds, all of the bodies, all of the sense organs, all of the swabhavas, all of the dispositions are really just a combination of sattva, rajas, and tamas, and all of them are existing within the order of Maya. And that order of Maya is something that the infinite order within Maya is something that we go on discovering, in science, for instance. We go on discovering that order. We go on, in the psychological world, we go on discovering also the order of Dharma. So, now, this Maya, including our body, mind, sense organs, has no being apart from me, and in fact, it is a manifestation of myself, because it doesn't belong to anybody else, and it has no being of its own. So this Maya is a manifestation of my being, which is the very truth of every part of the manifestation, but from the standpoint of all of the jivas, from their standpoint, because of the sattva of the mind and sense organs, for them, I as though abide there in their buddhi. I actually abide in the rock equally to the buddhi. It's not that the rock has less of me than the buddhi has. It's that the buddhi has reflecting capacity and the rock doesn't. It's like if I held up a rock to the sun and a mirror to the sun. You know, the sun has no preferential treatment at all. But the material of the rock is different than the material of the mirror. And so the mirror seems to contain me. And so from the standpoint of all of the jivas, I'm just silently abiding there, doing absolutely nothing, just simply being. But it is my being, really, that makes, that is responsible for the infinite order of maya, the play of sattva, rajas, and tamas, which keeps everything moving according to that order. You know? So that's what he's saying here. Making, you know, sitting there silently doing nothing in the heart of all beings, just abiding there in the heart of all beings. Everyone is scurrying around, rotating, you know, Brahman, moving around as though they're on some sort of a merry-go-round, as though by magic. You know, it's as magic, really. But it's all part of an infinite order, you know. And no one can escape that order. That's the idea. There's no escaping the order. The order is this body, mind, sense, organs is part and parcel of that order. You never escape the order. You know, you recognize that you've always been free of that order from the standpoint. That is the moksha. The moksha is the recognition that my being is completely free of that order. Even while this order, even while I have this body, mind, sense organs, I am free of that order. But now that knowledge also changes my disposition, right? And the Karma Yoga changes my disposition within that order, within the order. You know, it's not like the disposition that takes place in the mind becoming more sattva is outside of the order. It's also not at all that the mind gaining knowledge is outside of that order. Also, when the mind gains knowledge, then its raga dveshas are not functioning, likes and dislikes are not functioning in the way they used to. They all become mitya. In fact, the whole maya for the jnani becomes mitya, which means that if I recognize it's mityatvam, I recognize really that there's nothing here but myself, and that the ananda that has been kept me on that merry-go-round, you know, is actually, what's kept me on the merry-go-round is just simply the projection of ananda. That's what it amounts to. The projection of ananda onto the mitya keeps me on the merry-go-round. When the projection of that ananda, that wholeness, is withdrawn, you know, it's kind of like they use the example like how moths go toward a flame. We go toward the flame of ananda, just naturally. That's part of the, because of the ajnanam, you know, we're all going toward the flame of ananda. But what about when we've discovered the flame to be my own being? That's the thing. As I discover the flame to be my own being, the mind transforms, the mind changes. It changes from wanting to gain ananda out here because it no longer sees it as being out here, and it starts to just enjoy being with my own being and letting Ishwar be. So there's transformation that is taking place here, and we find that because of habitual behavior, habitual, what he calls the swabhava, you know, your very swabhava, that change takes place in time. It takes place gradually. As in the commentary also, and Swamiji points out, even your will, your choices that you make, you know, are coming out of your swabhava, that mix of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Why do you make this choice over that choice? You know, it's because of this mix, you know. That mix belongs to who? The prakriti is all part of Ishwara's play. It's all part of the dharma. And so this, as I start to understand, you start to understand this, Karma Yoga and all of this becomes much, much more meaningful. You know, because the Karma Yoga is a way of letting your mind be in the midst of your own nature. You know? It accommodates your own nature in such a way that as you're withdrawing the projection of Ananda, slowly but surely, takes some time for that really to be withdrawn because we have so many habits, you know. But with that attitude, that prasada buddhi and all of the things involved in karma, in that karma yoga attitude, all of the behavior that is just based upon habitual ajnana, habitual ignorance, drops off, and my nature actually changes. The prakriti changes and becomes more sattvic, because nothing really, I don't have anything at stake out here. And my wholeness and my well-being and my pride and all of these type of things no longer mean anything. Because then there's reasons for that too. The nature of yourself, or do this in some meditations, the nature of the Atma is so strong. It's immovable. It's immovable because it's one without a second, so it has nowhere to go. It can't move in any way. And so when you're with yourself, you can notice just a tremendous amount of strength. You know, it's not like physical strength. It's much more than that. It's an infinite, changeless being that nobody can do anything to it. You know? So that's an incredibly strong. So Swamiji's used the example that, nice to kind of contemplate on this example when you're contemplating. Just imagine a lion in the jungle, you know. A lion is in the jungle and he's just relaxing there. You're in a meadow. He's just so comfortably relaxing. Enjoying himself. And a little mouse comes and crawls up on his back, you know, and starts running all around on his back and jumping up and down on his back, you know, kind of making a little pesty nuisance of himself from somebody you might be looking on. But for the lion doesn't care at all. Nothing happens to the lion. If anything, you just shrug. But it's so inconsequential, you know. And no matter what the little mouse might be doing or saying, you know, it's inconsequential to the lion. So the lion's ego isn't going to be slighted, you know, by the mouse pounding on him, you know. The lion's ego isn't going to go, "I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you for doing that." It's inconsequential, you know. And so like that, these things that at one point may have really upset Arjuna, his ego just, you know, burned. There comes a time when that isn't going to happen, not because of becoming weak, but because you're the lion and Duryodhana's the little mouse. So that's the kind of transformation that has to take place, where these things don't have the power to prick you or upset you, because the self really is, can't be damaged in that way. So that's the idea.
Let's take the Kshatriyas were the rulers.
The ruling and the warriors.
They had to look after people.
Yeah, yeah, and they had to keep order and fight and all of that. And his disposition was still better than a kshatriya. Swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam
Nyayena margena nahim mahishah Go brahmane vyashivamastu nityam Loka samasta sukino pavantu Kale varshatu parajanyaha Prithivi sasya shalini Desho yamsho parahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve pavantu sukinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritam gamaya Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
this disposition that even though somebody can have a sattvic mind and very clear, it almost sounds like it's the dispositions equivalent to the unconscious or being pushed by.
Well, there's some, for us especially in our area, there is a lot of unconscious material that you can deal with in the same way as that svabhava. Yeah. But there's also, you know, having just naturally be more hot-tempered or more of the ruling class or a leader, as opposed to being somebody who just wants to sit and contemplate and study all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different dispositions. Mm-hmm. Or somebody who just really likes to be in agriculture and work out in the fields. And it's a different temperament, you know. So we're also bringing in unconscious material because that's something we have to deal with maybe more than they used to have to deal with it when the society was more dharmic, more in order.
So this disposition is a learned...
I don't think it's just learned. I think they're also talking about being born, especially in the terms of the whole caste system. When we look at it now, we think of, oh, this is just an imposition on all of these people. But it didn't used to be looked at like that. It would be like, because of the prarabdha karma, you would be born into a family that had more of a rajasattva disposition. That would be kshatriya, where the brahmana is predominantly sattva, you know, with some rajas. But the kshatriya is rajas with some sattva, like that. So there's kind of a different mix of temperament. That's why, even just imagine getting rid of all of the unconscious complexes, there's still a lot of difference in the different types of people. And we have some, like, even Jung's psychological types or the Enneagram. There's in all of the different cultures there, they have different ways of categorizing different types of people, and they're not talking about complexes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Complexes are on top of that. Covering it up. We've got to get through the complexes to get to our svabhava. Yeah.
Something that came up for me talking about, you know, doing karma yoga buddhi and becoming more sattvic or without intention. And how does that fit with, like, people talk about being passionate about your work and, you know, engaged in that way?
I don't think it has anything to do with being passionate or not passionate. It has to do, I think, more with that Ishwara buddhi, I think. which allows you to be present to the creation as it is. But that doesn't mean all of a sudden you just become like a lump. You know, it's like, it kind of reminds me of people are really, some artists were really afraid of going to a psychologist because they were afraid that they'd lose their creativity. If they worked on any shadow material, that they would lose their creativity. But I think the opposite is in fact true on a psychological level. And I think that the passion that we have is in relationship, the passion that we have that's real for who we are has very much to do with our prarabdha karma, you know.
I'm thinking especially like a kshatriya where, like for Arjuna, he's killing, basically.
Or, yeah, killing or
fighting
or being a leader of the people as a king, for instance, a king or a prince.
And Duryodhana.
But you know, there was a... I forget his name, I'll think of it in a minute. Famous king who was a jnani. You know? And so... Starts with a J, Ja.
Oh.
Yeah, go ahead. Janaka.
Janaka. Yeah. And he was a great jnani, and he ruled the whole kingdom and everything, but you can do it predominantly separate, which means that you're not at the mercy of your anger. Where Arjuna could be really at the mercy, and so could Bhishma, they could be really at the mercy of their emotions, you know, rather than have their emotions have that shama and dhamma. And yet they were still had a lot of cleanliness. They were ruled by dharma, but that doesn't mean that they weren't at the mercy of their anger or that their, you know.
So then what do they do to get more stuff?
I
just as a theoretical.
Seems the lawyers are asking about this.
I think it has to that karma yoga buddhi, you know, is really the best, where you do the action but you take the results as that with that prasada buddhi. And the focus is becomes much more on dharma than on raga dvesha. So it's the neutralization of the raga dvesha, of the likes and dislikes. I think the raga dvesha, because in truth, the likes and dislikes are because of your projection. Otherwise, they just become mithya. Mithya means you have a preference, but your well-being is not at stake. That means the raga dvesha has become mithya, you know. Or just for samsaric preferences are like that. You prefer this, but if you don't get it, it's fine. But for a jnani, everything is reduced to preferences rather than raga dvesha. Raga dvesha means literally, I want this so that I can be happy. Your well-being, your happiness is at stake, you know. Or I don't want this, on the negative, I don't want this so that I can be happy. So with a preference, how we mean it as mithya, I want this and I don't want this, but if I don't get it, it's fine. It's not like something is at stake. There's nothing at stake for me. And when that's the truth, the situation, then you've pulled the fangs out of your anger. Mm-hmm. You know, so those, you're not prone to those reactions so much. And then that karma yoga buddhi also has to do with your devotion to dharma is really your devotion to Ishwara. Because what that dharma is Ishwara. It's what is Ishwara doing right now? What is, in a sense, what is being asked of me in this moment? What's being asked of me? You know? That's what it is. And that's what I do. You know? And so the other things, like your likes and dislikes, actually become irrelevant. And they deserve to be irrelevant in terms of to be mithya, because they're not real. The ananda that you're seeking out of that is only your own being. And in fact, that wholeness or fullness is, even from a a samsari point of view is much more stable if you just stick with dharma. Because if you stick with dharma, dharma gives a deeper happiness than your raga dvesha. And your raga dvesha is always hooked onto some object or person out here. Where dharma has to do, it's more cerebral. You know, it has to do with what is correct. What is Bhagavan asking of me in this situation? That's what I want to do. You know, and so it's not about becoming happy. But that attitude gives me much more happiness. Because in fact, in truth, the source of the happiness is of my own being, and dharma gives you a shantavritti. And it's a prolonged shantavritti. Whereas feeling doing these raga dveshas is just momentary. It's all based on something out here, you know. So the dharma isn't really based on something out here. That dharma can even be turned toward your own mind. Like that ahimsa and do unto others, which is the primary dharma, really, the non-injury, the ahimsa, and do unto others and as you would have done to yourself, don't do to others as you wouldn't want done to yourself. That becomes overarching, but it should be overarching externally and internally. And then all of your thoughts, all of the little ones inside, the unconscious, even, you know, the inner critic that you may have picked up from your parents growing up, you know. Yeah. Whatever, in whatever form, you know, where you have the way you talk to yourself can be, you know, hurtful. That can all change, you know, by turning that same dharma toward the way that you treat yourself internally. Because that inner critic can be really make a mess. It means you have no shanti, internal shanti. Because there's somebody always criticizing or always disappointed in you or feeling you're not good enough or all of this kind of thing, you know. And so when you grow up with something like that, then inside you'll always be feeling I'm not good or I'm not good enough or whatever you picked up from your family life when you were young, all that just becomes an ongoing way that you talk to yourself. And you can go through your whole life without even noticing it because it's always been there. And so even if it's creating a lot of pain inside, you don't know any different because you've lived ever since childhood with that type of tension and pain inside.
Well, how do you address that? And I mean, what?
Because when the teacher or the psychologist points it out to you, then you start looking for it and you ask yourself, how am I talking to myself? And you start becoming aware instead of just having it be in the background, you know, not bringing any attention to itself because it's never not there. You know, so you just take it totally for granted until somebody points it out. And then it's a wonderful thing because you can actually just say something, no, I don't need to talk to myself like that. And then bring in that inner friend.
And then you started a different way of talking.
Yeah. And the thing is, as soon as you do it, the rest of your mind becomes so happy, so relieved, so grateful, you know, that's kind of an awakening, and then you start to do that, talk that way more and correct that negative voice. It's not that hard to correct because the rewards are so great. And then you end up having a much more beautiful space inside. Yeah. You just think of it in the outside, in this world, like say you're living in your family life, there's somebody who is always makes it awful for you. Like say if you have a violent parent or something, everybody's walking around on their tiptoes all the time, and as soon as the violent parent comes home, they're all scurrying like little mice trying to get in their mouth holes to get away, you know. You can never relax in the presence of someone like that.
But it's not only violence. You can get passed on, say, a wound. Say if your parents have been wounded in a certain respect.
Yeah, that's right. All of it.
Yeah.
Yep. Seven generations. In the Bible, it says that they have something like that too in India, where, you know, whatever the parents are holding.
Yeah.
It takes seven generations to weed that out.
The Bible says that you're higher than Sufis.
Yeah, it's common.
Well, they told me in India that the people, the family you're born into, they're all people that owe debts to each other. If the debts are low, then there's generally harmony in the family. If they're high, there's tension.
Mm. Wow. I've never heard that.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of
interesting. That's interesting.
I'd like to see what the source of that is. That's interesting. Well, we're all definitely, you would say, if you understand the prarabdha, definitely we all of us are connected. Mm-hmm. Everybody that you know that you run into, there's some sort of karmic connection there, right?
Whether you like them or not.
Yeah, 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 positive and yeah, negative.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Arjuna was almost compelled to fight because this Duryodhana had to be stopped. I mean, he was
That's the whole thing. Yeah, he had to be stopped. It wasn't Arjuna's choice. Oh, let's go have a war with this guy.
Yeah.
It's that it's a battle between Dharma and Adharma. That's the whole point of it. And so he was put in that place. Then he's thinking, I don't want to do this. Yeah. By going to say no.
But there was no option. I mean, there really wasn't any option, even on just a material level, let alone.
Well, it'd been pretty hard for him to scurry away. He could have done it, I suppose. Because now we'll see in the next verse or so, Krishna finishes up in a way, and now he says, okay, think over clearly everything I've said. And then you do what you want. That's what he's going to say in the next verse. But then he says, but let me tell you a little bit more. Just before you do that.
We're really getting close to the end.
We're getting close, yeah.